Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime. LGBT thriller.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on FM,
102.3 FM Riverside
and 1050 AM Palm Springs.
Welcome back into the House of Mystery, and of course I'm Al Warren, Mr. David North Martino.
Ah, the full name, it's back.
That means I'm going to be bad.
Oh yeah, exactly.
So, So you put pictures of the concert you were at.
Yes.
Yeah.
To see the New Kids mixtape tour.
Yeah. Yeah. Did they lip sync?
That was an old allegation.
Yeah. That's what I was wondering. Did they?
Not that I could tell. No, you could tell that they, you know, didn't hit every note.
Oh, so they were singing out of tune.
A little bit, but, you know, it still works.
Well, that's good.
And it's a show. I think I'll put it in my top five.
Wow.
For concerts. It was fun.
Better than Metallica and Motley Crue and all that?
Motley Crue would probably be my top. Dr. Feelgood tour.
Yeah. Well, so there you go. but Rick Astley played too.
Yeah, he did. He Rick rolled us. It was great.
Well, that's great.
No. Yeah, he did a few songs.
Yeah, and
Salt and Pepper.
Salt and Pepper and Non Vogue.
Wow. Yeah.
Jeez, it was like all coming back. The 90s is all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
It's like being in a time machine.
Yeah.
I felt young again.
Yeah, just keep stay away from the mirror and you won't. No. I hear you know how you can stay young.
How?
Well, you're not getting enough sleep. You've got to sleep proper. So what they say is you've got to start, now the new rage on TikTok is to put tape over your mouth and breathe through your nose, okay?
And sounds dangerous.
Well, it is for me. I wouldn't make it at night. Plus, I can't have tape all over my mouth. What are they, crazy? What people won't do, you know, taping up their eyelids and their face and their mouth and just to look pretty.
Make a video on TikTok and just put it out there.
Yeah, actually, I should. One of you.
I'm too dangerous for TikTok.
Oh, right.
They took one of my videos down.
So did you quit?
No, I thought about it. Thought about it for about, you know, a good 20 minutes while I was seething.
Well, it's just...
But I'm just like, just wait for now.
You know, just do another one.
Too dangerous. Dangerous acts.
Well, yeah, you are. Everybody see you live.
I'm dangerous.
That's dangerous. Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Dangerous.
Yeah. Well, it triggered me.
Yes, exactly.
I'm the one. I had to complain when I saw it. I was triggered, so I let them know.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah.
I'm glad I wouldn't want to trigger you, Al.
Yeah, no, because I was shaking for a day.
Too dangerous for TikTok.
Yeah. Now, you know, speaking of triggering, now, so we've got a horror story here. And it's called Grolar, half grizzly, half polar bear. So, Mr. Thorsten Nesch, thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. Thanks.
Yeah, Thorsten. So this is quite a story. So where did you get the idea of Grolar? Like, is it, I guess that's a real animal, isn't it?
Yeah. It started out, I think I just heard about that is a real animal. And then it lingered on until I came across, what is it called? The liger, like half lion, half tiger. And those species or those mix grew taller than each own animal. So, and then I was like, what if that happens to a growler, right? Like that grows bigger than either a polar bear or a grizzly. And I felt like that could be a story. And since the number of them is growing since the last years due to, they say, climate change, that the grizzlies can go higher and the polar bears, they meet more often, and that's why they are more growlers. I thought maybe I have a story there.
So who's the tougher one, the grizzly or the polar? like a
the inner polar bear. I think I didn't want to meet either one, but definitely not the mix of.
Yeah. Well, I wonder. That's funny because you know we have on my house up in Kelowna, we have these wolves and coyotes, and they're mixing.
Oh, wow.
And they have a really big wolf body, and they have a real small, tiny coyote head. That's how you can tell. But we had a couple of visitors that were from Germany that work with animals and scientists. So they're not like pet care, they're scientists. And they said that a lot of times when these animals mix, when they have their child, if it's a female, it can't get pregnant. It's sterile. So that's why it only grows so far, so fast. It takes a long time for a new species like that to really catch on. So it's funny. I wonder if it's the same with the growlers or if they don't have that.
It's interesting. I did, of course, like a lot of research before riding and doing the riding. I haven't come across any fact that said that a growler can't procreate. I think that they are fine doing that.
Well,
they just look.
Yeah.
Yeah. They have often these dark eyes from a grizzly, and outside it's a little lighter fur. So they look kind of creepy too.
Yeah. Well, you'll have to get a couple and put it in your house and then see. Have them breed and they have a child and see how it goes, you know. But be careful what you feed them. Like, don't feed them your hand or anything, you know. Put it in the dish and run. So you got a growler. And so how do you write a story around something like that? Is this just flat-out horror, or is there a lot more suspense in this?
Yeah, so I mean, with the original idea, as I said, like, okay, there should be a story in there, of course. Then for me, always the next thing, how do I who's the protagonist? I chose in my novel John, who works in a gold mining camp, and he has to bring his wife and his young boy there too, up in the Yukon, and that's where the growler gets hungry and visits that camp, and they are really remote. And for me, it was an idea when I mentioned the climate change. Maybe there's an environmental thriller in there, where I was like, okay, they meet because of climate change, or at least growing temperature, rising temperatures. What is up there? Okay, there's oil, right? Oil exploitation, and but the other thing is coal. And I thought I never had anything to do with that. a lot of gold, and that was a nice research as well. But it, thematically, it jived. I found, and then I took it from there.
Well, did you have to take artistic liberties with describing the growler and creating that as kind of a monstrous character, or were you able to just go by the scientific evidence?
I took it a step further. So for me, in my case, I said, okay, this beast is going to be bigger, yeah, and than a polar bear and a grizzly bear. But beside that, I prefer to go with the science, like how the senses work and what they, you know, the smell and everything. And that's why I ended up actually having two perspectives, the perspective of John and the perspective of the growler. I so far had really good feedback by readers. They really liked that. And many wanted to have more of that.
Wow. So you got into the mind of the growler. You were the growler.
Yeah. That it is quite also something I've never done before, like from the point of view of an animal.
Yeah.
I must say I truly enjoyed it, and I hit the brakes because I didn't want to do like an animal novel from the point of view. And but certain scenes just let they want it to be.
Yeah. Well, how do you get into a role of something like that as opposed to a character, like a character's in your mind or whatever? So do you like dress up like a bear and go out in the woods and talk to people? Or?
I I also, I, you know, we are on radio, audio, podcasts, etc. I'm an audio person, for example, and this is a different sense than writing itself. And an animal, you can work better with the senses and what they sense and the instincts. And that's kind of what led the perspective of the growler. So I focused more on smells, for example, and went along that route. And I really enjoy that, by the way. It's as if I adapted for public radio also novels as a radio play for German public radio. And I just love that process of thinking in different senses.
Wow. So does the growler have special powers, or is there something about them that humans should be scared of?
Besides being very hangry.
Yeah.
And,
well, that could be like John's wife can be very angry too. Right? Yeah. I mean, so, but what more, or is the wife tougher than the growler?
Maybe they can have a standoff or something between. I thought by the sheer size, by being, let's say, 50% or 60% bigger than the original animal, it sort of gave him a superpower there, and I didn't want to extend too much on that. And I felt like I like to keep it real as possible, or work in with reality in the realm of fiction as much as I can. And I find it almost then more creepy and more horror, actually, the closer it is to reality rather than, say, a vampire.
Right. Well, you could have made him the bionic roller.
That's a sequel.
Yeah, he eats some radiated meat, and then he starts seeing for miles and jump and all this. Make him stronger. Well, that's interesting. This kind of reminds me of something I would get out of a sci-fi horror from the 50s and 60s. Do you know what I mean?
I must say, and I can totally live with that, often compared to Stephen King, like people think of Cujo. As research, I also read Jaws, right, the novel. So I read a lot of those animal horror books. And I just love research too, right? Like I really immerse myself into that. All the gold mining camp. I did not know what kind of digger and dump trucks they need. And so that was, and what weapons I'm not into. So, but I read that all up, and it's part of the interest. Sometimes it ruins my Google search history, and I get weird advertisements.
Yeah. I you're probably flagged by the FBI or something, eh?
At those times, I'm pretty sure. It's when I go into detail, like, what kind of rifle would you take to the
camp, right? Yeah, to the baseball game, you know? And then, whoops.
So,
to try to fly. Freeze. But are you worried about, like, you're kind of involved climate change, and you know, it's a controversial topic, especially in America and stuff. You know, a lot of people still think it's not real. And so you have all of this stuff going on. Do you worry about being too controversial or touching off on something that might get you a little bit backlash?
When I decided, I was about 23 when I decided that I kind of want to work to buy myself time to write and to be an artist. For me, it was always, I have to write what I have to write, and I don't, otherwise I could go into advertisement. That's what the saying is, because like, if you juggle with words and with fantasy, if you want to make more money, you go into advertisement. And some of my colleagues did, so eventually.
Yeah.
For me, it's always the best idea. I don't want to, that's why I also, you know, is about climate change. Yeah, you know, it's like, I'm not like putting the flag out. It is so. It's just the fact is that the temperature is rising. I think I kind of phrased that before too, like that. Does it bring some attention to it? But I think the entertainment part of a horror novel based on that, based on a consequence on a direct, measurable, countable consequence that is in the foreground.
Yeah. Do you consider this more horror or sci-fi, or how would you describe this?
I go with a horror thriller because it is horror because of the animal horror, right? Like that genre is in there.
Yeah.
But the tension is really drawn out. And also then, you know, you follow around the young boy that wanders off into the forest, right? And finds stuff and brings it home. And I'm not going into details. And, you know, you get those hints as a reader. I kind of push the arrival after the first incidents of the growler, like to in order to raise the tension in the reader, and as a writer as well. I mean, I don't want to be bored writing my own novel.
Well, with your human characters, how do you experience them? Do you have an inner monologue? Can you hear the dialogue in your mind as you're creating these characters? Do you see the story more as a film in your mind? How does that work for you?
Yeah, that goes into how I. So for me, it takes at least 2 years before I start a novel after I have the initial idea. So at least 2 years, and it goes up to 18 years. And that is more than once happened in the past that I just start writing when I do hear their voice, their attitude. I see the attitude. I hear the narration voice, who's narrating the novel, who's telling the story, and where are they in their lives? That is, I put a lot of thoughts into that because I don't want to just start writing. I never had the luxury of just starting a novel and see where it goes. That would be for me too much risk to waste my time, right? Yeah. I have so many ideas that at one point I always grab the most concrete, best developed, and most important idea, and that's what I write.
So when you write this book, what is it you hope the reader will take away from the book? What is it you want to do to that reader?
First and foremost, I always want to, I call it giving a hand, you know, reaching out to a reader and not just having like a, I don't know, like some abstract going on. I'm more like with the feet to the ground, and it should be first and foremost a story you like to read. And maybe, yeah, en passant, it might be the idea, do I inform myself? Is there climate change, or who is saying what, and what are the numbers or not? And maybe just because it's about animals as well. And what are we doing? Is that, are certain things important? But I wouldn't take it too esoteric in a way. It's just like, first and foremost, this is a horror story, an entertainment book.
Wow. What were your influences for writing horror?
I started reading really, really young. I grew up basically on comics first. Then I went to school. I learned reading. Then I read all the comics again that I could just look at. And by fourth grade, I discovered the Pulp Fiction novels. And those were back then in the Cold War. They were war novels. So I read those for 2 years. And then I discovered John Sinclair was a horror pulp fiction, placed in England, but written by Germans, as far as I know. But as a kid, you're impressed and you read all those. And then in the advertisement, there was this guy called Stephen King with his new book, Christine. And after I read Christine, I read all Stephen King books. And by the age of 15, I had read his books, and I read with age of 15, The Godfather. And after that, there was no going back to other novels. And so it was contemporary fiction or good horror or thrillers. That is kind of how I grew up.
Yeah. Well, so it's always a tough move to actually decide to write and try to make money at it and stuff. What was it that made you want to do that?
Yeah, I always say it's a, especially when I talk to young adults and to teens or to young adults, is I came from a family, I was loved, and, you know, I got all the books I wanted, you know, what is great when you have that interest as a boy. But there was no artist in there, and there was nobody in there that was self-employed, you know, what all plays into becoming an artist, right? You try to be self-employed at one point.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was not on the radar, although I was already writing. I started writing like around 15 as well. But it was like, I gave it to my friends, right? And they gave it graded back. You know, I got a C minus and D pluses and so on for my short stories. And I continued to the, I worked 3 years in a public health insurance, like full time. But I didn't feel good, the point of, I would say, almost self-destructive behavior. And then I said, I need a break from everything. And then I tried to go to university. And then I hit the point where it was like, okay, now I have to work to go to university and meet people and all this other, all the other jazz. And all of a sudden it dawned on me, okay, if I work for something, then I want to work so I can write. And then it dawned on me, that was what I was missing during those 3 years of public health insurance, what in itself is a great job. But just for me, doing something else all day, I couldn't imagine. And then I made the conscious decision with the impression that I'd probably never be able to actually make a living as an artist because there's illusional, right?
Yeah.
So, and yeah, no, yeah. And I knew that, right? So, and then I was 23 and then I was 38. So 15 years later, I made a living. But before that was 15 years of, the odd jobs. And then the jobs got closer. I worked also for radio. I worked as a journalist, you know, and then I wrote treatments for film companies and film production companies. And then finally, my first novel was nominated as Best German Debut Young Adult Fiction. And I sold the film rights right away before it came out. And that changed my life. Like, then I was a full-time writer with my own stories.
Yeah. Well, now that you've made it, what advice would you give to someone that's brand new, just writing and hasn't published anything, but they're writing stories?
Yeah, I was for very long in that situation, and if you keep writing and you squeeze it between your schedule and your chores and all that stuff, that's a good sign that you love doing that. I would say, like, what do you need in life? You shouldn't renounce anything. You shouldn't say like, okay, I really want to have a car, but if I want to write, then I sell my car and I miss it every day dearly. It would hurt, right? Like, you have to answer the question for yourself, what do I need in life? And my thing, I did sell my car. I didn't buy any brand name clothes, and I lived simple, but very happy. And I developed my craft, because there is no college degree. And after that, you can work full time. So for me, it was really this, like, yeah, I can work part time and live as long as I can write. And I started doing readings, right? So you get the direct feedback and send your stuff out to magazines or to blogs and such to see where you are and to grow your craft, you know, to enjoy it. Then if you're not enjoying it, don't write for money. It's like, that will be a wrong angle.
Well, yeah, you'd be like Dave. You know. So he's a whore. He's writing for money.
Yes, that's it.
Terrible. Sell out. He sold out.
Sell out. Yeah. Terrible.
Terrible person. Awful.
Yes.
The thing not to do is be like him.
Yeah. That's to go to those expensive concerts, like.
Well, yeah, you know. Yeah. He's sitting right up front row looking at the new kids. He gets to go in the back room and shake their hand and Rick Astley and that, and he's
having, and I performed on stage.
Yeah, he's having a cocktail with Rick and before you know it, he's a sellout.
You know,
I saw him on TikTok with Rick.
Yeah, enough to leave. Well, it's quite a business. But what do you think makes you know, a good book? Like, what is it you look for in a good book? Like, when you read something, is it the way they write it? Is it the language, the grammar? Is it just the story? Or what to you is like, wow, this is a good book?
Obviously, I work right here in my second language, which is English. So, but it is the language. It definitely is the language that draws me the most. So before I decide on reading a novel, if it's not for research, I read the first one or two pages and I know if I can read this, you know, because often the craft of language and storytelling at least go for me hand in hand. Or if you want to compare it to filmmaking, you would watch a movie that doesn't have a good picture, but the audio is good, versus you have a good picture, but you can hardly understand what the guys say. You wouldn't watch the movie to the end.
Right.
Well, speaking of that, you know, you worked with a translator for the English version and such. How was that? Did you have a hands-on, work with that person?
Yeah, it's really interesting. I mean, I have also this, like, again, like the screenplay or film background, what means like I'm not against working with other people. I also co-authored a couple of novels with other writers. So for me, having a translator, especially, you should never translate into your second language. You always should translate in your first language, I was told. And I wouldn't dare to translate, especially not to translate into my second language. For me, it was great to find the right person, and then also to say, like, you know, don't cling to try to find the 100% equivalent of the German expression. Feel yourself in there and go with what you would write. I gave a lot of freedom to the translator.
Right. Well, I think that's important. You know, I just did a book a while back on Fritz Haarmann. And he was the Butcher of Hanover.
Oh, yeah,
in
yeah,
the
yeah.
20s. And of course, all of the police documents, the court documents, all of the everything was in German, and all the letters, yeah. Everything. So I went through just translation. And then there's a lot of sayings that are not common here that were there. So they'll say things in a certain way that you're like, what does he mean? You know, so I had to work with someone like a translator like that, a German that could tell me kind of what the slang was or what was kind of going on. So it's pretty it's a little bit more complicated than it looks.
Yeah, it's challenging. I at the moment I read a lot of poetry and lyrics, you know, and I'm like, how do you translate poetry? That is for me, yeah, but it works. And I mean, you can go for the content, right? Like, do you want to transport the content or the rhythm? But both, I would say, is almost impossible, right?
Yeah, it's tough. It's tough. It's you have to be very careful in how to do it. But yeah. It's interesting. So your characters, how do you create your characters? And I mean that, like, for instance, in Groller, you had, like, John and the wife and the boy and stuff. So how do you do it, and this is your own personal way of doing it. How is it that works for you?
Yeah, you know, with at this point, like with Groller, it was okay. I had this Groller idea of the, you know, and then I had the idea, okay, that happens for a gold mining camp, and then the next one, okay, who's gonna be there, you know, and then you go through the possibilities. And when I came to Canada for the first time as a backpacker, I met on the Sunshine Coast two guys who were construction guys from Vancouver, and they were complaining. We shoot some pool and had beer, and they were complaining that they had to leave Vancouver for the job, like 500 kilometer or 300 north to make some money, you know, and it's hard in Vancouver, and it's already a time back. And that always stuck with me, because like they were like real guys, and they were definitely not happy being away from the families, right? So, and then I was like, okay, if one of those guys, you know, he doesn't find a job in construction, and but he somehow can land this job even in the Yukon in a gold mining camp, right? And then I thought, like, well, you know, then he, you know, to save maybe even like the rent in Vancouver, which is outrageous now, yeah. Maybe he, it's easier to fly the wife in and the young boy, right? And then all of a sudden you have this added tension of like, just not, let's say, 10 badly shaved smelling guys in a camp, but a wife and a young boy, and that extends the whole storytelling. So I really like that and embrace that.
Why didn't he just fly in the girlfriend, leave the wife at home?
That's what the other guy did.
Yeah. There's always one. Come on. There's always one that does that. Well, but you know, I ask this because I've been in a nonfiction writing my whole life. So I look at fiction writers, and a lot of fiction writers over the years have told me that, you know, they feel their characters, they see them, they hear them, and they describe them as like family or friends or whatever. They have mm-hmm. all this stuff. What's that for you? Like, how do you describe that situation?
Yeah, it's very easy how I describe that. It's like having, when you let's say you go to university and then you do a year in a different country. And that's how much each novel stays with me. Like, you meet new people in a different environment. You yourself might be a little different, right? Like if you guys now would go, let's say, to Barcelona for a year and study Spanish and then you go back, right?
Yeah.
And you know, that is a memory that is like tattooed into every cell, I think. And that's pretty much each novel of mine, how I feel about the characters and the story. It's like as if I've lived it. That's how it is.
Wow. So each book is like a process. It's like a it changes you then in a sense.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Like it's a story. I think it has to do with empathy. Like if you're an avid reader, they say like your levels of empathy are bigger, or you grow empathy by reading books because you want to help John, you want to help the boy, or, you know, ideally, right? If you're not a,
yeah.
And the same is like for me when I write it, right? Like I choked up at the end, at the final, at the showdown, you know, I remember that day to the very day.
Oh, so when Groler rips the boy apart.
I don't want to tell you, I don't give anything away.
And eats him.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. No.
Yeah.
We got to have a happy ending. Yeah, the boy rips the Groler apart. No, the Groler marries John's wife and adopts the boy. I got some good ideas here.
Maybe you do some fan fiction.
Yeah, see? Yeah, there you go. No, it's just crazy.
You're a romantic, Al.
I am. The ripping apart the body during romance is the best. strange. Well, that's interesting then. So how do you experience your characters?
Yeah, at the time, it's I can just tell you, like, for me, if I write, let's say I wrote this novel at a paid writer's place in Denmark. So I was there a month, I prepared everything, I sat down and I wrote the novel in the first draft. And for me, so I could spend a lot of time, like 8 hours a day, not doing anything else, or 10 even. And then afterwards, it's also, for me, it feels like I don't have to experience anything. It's not like, oh, I want to go bungee jumping, or I need to do anything, because I live as much through the characters, or followed them around and smelled what they smelled and felt what they felt, depending to who they talk and if there's tension. And I would say, like, you know, people say, well, what is real? Maybe we're dreaming, that's reality. And what we're talking now here is a dream. I don't want to go that far, but
yeah.
It is up there.
Dave and I do not exist. You're talking to yourself.
Exactly. It's on your mind. Well, you know,
you have you said that with your stories that you kind of develop them maybe in your mind first and make sure that you have a viable book. But I'm just wondering, have your characters done anything to surprise you? Have they rebelled against the plot that you've kind of plotted out? Or do you feel very much in control?
Feel in control, yet they surprise me. But that has to do, like, if I let's talk about the plot, okay? The plotting itself. Yes, I know a rough plot idea. Does it mean I write 40 pages of treatment, step treatment? Oh, not at all. Every novel I wrote, when I started writing it, I just have one page, letter-sized page with a timeline on there, and I write what happens where, as open as possible. Let's say in one novel, I always take that as an example. The two kids steal a car. No, that's all there is. I don't know if it was at a gas station. I don't know if it was a BMW or how they stole it. You know, so there is a, once I start writing, there's still a lot of freedom when I write for the characters to, and that is for me the most important part. Every time I step basically mentally into a scene for the first time through the eyes of the protagonist, that is for me the most important moment. So only then I can guarantee there is authentic reaction or action.
It sounds like you live out the parts. It seems to me like you do you hear voices too, or?
My own voice. I from the, let's say, 14 novels that I wrote, I dictated 10 of them at least. Like, I work with a speech recognition program.
Yeah.
So I hear the sound and the melody of the words and the sentences at the same time. That doesn't mean I can write faster, because I still think a lot, but there is a process of, like, yeah, I'm definitely alone, and I'm so much in there that I speak out loudly the dialogues. Yes.
Yeah. You drink a lot?
Not when I'm writing. That was an experiment I did, like, because I discovered Charles Bukowski and those beat generation guys. And the first mistake I did was thinking that the German beer is the same strength as American beer. Oh. And that the bottles have the same size. Yeah. So. And then I figured, okay, this is not how this works. And actually, if I never drink more, let's say, than a glass of wine.
So, right drunk and second, sober.
Yeah. That would be a lot of editing.
Yes, I know, right?
Yeah. Boom. So that word doesn't, gladly it doesn't work for me.
Well, with so many books written, have you noticed any motifs, any recurrent themes in your work? And if so, have they come out deliberately, or is it something that's unconscious?
That's a good question. That actually my readers answered to me while I went on reading tours. There was a question that I noticed that comes where they found out, it's like, do you like writing in tight environments? I was like, what do you mean? You know, oh, well, the one story is a road movie in a car. Then the other novel takes place in a remote gold mining camp. The next one under a derailed train. So, and I was, yeah, I think that's the commonality, actually. That is the biggest commonality between all my stories, that I kind of craft or mold this tight space, and then I try my elbows or something.
Wow. In your process of writing, you were talking about how you just sat down and wrote that last novel, that the Groller one. So can you just turn it on? Can you just sort of sit down and go, oh, okay, I'm going to write now and do it? Or is there other things you have to do?
Hey, it sounds boring, but I like a routine. I like to know that tomorrow at 7 in the morning I can start writing. What means today, I would not write myself what I call, I write myself empty. You know, let's say I finish a chapter, dot, and I have just a very vague idea how it goes on tomorrow. I like to stop writing, where I exactly know the next couple of pages, and I mean very, very, very sure like how this plays out. And in combination of, okay, tomorrow at 7 or tomorrow at 10, I sit down for 4 hours and I can write.
Wow. So does the emotional part in your life affect that? You know, so if there's someone screaming at you, or you get, if there's things, tension going on, does that bother you, or can you still write?
You see, one of the best questions that I ever got, I think. Because like, I think that affects me when I'm not writing, because then reality bothers me, while if I write my own reality, my fiction, pretty much, you know, not a big personal catastrophe, of course not, but other things don't matter really to me.
Wow. So when the COVID's going on and you're locked in your house and there's all these people going around protesting and all the weird stuff that goes on, it you can still sit there and write, and it doesn't even faze you, really.
Yeah, no, it was more the people that walked around in the house here, my kids. Oh.
Yeah.
So for years I tried to find a affordable writing space, and gladly last year I found it, and I have a little shared studio space where the other artists and me, we do a little schedule month by month, and I know that I can go there. For example, today after we finish our nice chat, I pack in and I will go there and work.
Wow. Wow, that's pretty disciplined. So have you ever written something and you decided that you didn't want to publish it because you didn't like it?
I think the classic would be my first novel, although it's really fresh. It was a horror novel, and I had the chance to get the hands on a big old key of an old Polish farmhouse in the southern Poland, and I drove out there, and there was no running water and no electricity, and I could just write even by candlelight. But you know, and I finished it, and the process made me utterly happy. But a month later or half a year later, I was like, yeah, this is not on the level I want to be, you know? So this one never got published, and I'm not crying a tear about it.
Yeah. Sounds like you were writing in Lethbridge. No power, dark.
Yeah.
Candle, you know. Yeah. sounds like Lethbridge. Yeah. Oh, that's terrible. I'm terrible. Well, so are you going to continue to write horror, or are you going to expand and go into something completely different, or do you think this is where you're set?
Yeah. With Lethbridge, like that is for me the biggest thing is really now having the studio. That's something I've never had, right? And that opens so many options. And so I think that wouldn't be even possible in Calgary or Vancouver because it's so expensive, right? So that is where, for me personally, as an artist, Lethbridge has that edge, right? Like where it's like, wow, that is possible. I embrace that for as it is. With what I'm currently finishing a novel, last edits, Suicide Hotel. It's a dystopian novel. I got a literary arts grant by the Alberta Foundation for the Arts. So that carried me over a whole year, and that was wonderful. And I'm looking forward already, because I'm in the planning phase of the next novel that will also take place in Alberta. Oh yeah, the dystopian novel even features Lethbridge. Believe it or not. Well,
is that the surviving town?
Yeah, exactly. It's just like I didn't have to change much, you know.
Yeah. yeah, the gas station went down.
So, and then there is something that happened, because I mentioned Poland. That's why I bring it up now again, because something happened with dreams in Poland, with theme of dreaming, and that always stayed with me on a personal level, and that will be my next novel. Will be about dreams, like in a wider sense, but it won't be a horror novel as Grola is, it might be more like psychological.
Right, right.
So, but I'm just flashing those things up.
Yeah, you kind of have to work them out. Have you ever gone back to any of your books and decided, oh God, and would you like to rewrite them and that? Do you do that sort of thing or not?
No, I think that would be that first novel, right? Where I was like, I think that is FUBAR, you know, yeah. Like a couple of years. And as much as I like the idea and of course this unbelievable memory of a young guy, like, I don't know, 24 I was maybe, driving to Poland to live alone for 3-4 weeks or whatever in a abandoned farmhouse, writing a novel has its own story, I think.
That sounds like a horror story in
itself. Yeah, it can be, I think. Actually, since then, I say I don't want to live alone on an island anymore, right? Like, so, but that has to do with the dreams, right? And so I'd like to tackle that as a next one, because that is also a field that is kind of, you know, I feel like a little bit abandoned by fiction writers. And in nonfiction, it often goes into like two esoteric terms. So, yeah, that's my next.
Yeah, no, it's one of those. It can be a fascinating direction, I think, to go in, you know, but we'll see what happens. So now, how do people find you? Like Lethbridge is only two houses, so we... So how did you have a website? Do you have like social media that you like to hang out in and talk to people, or do you do any of that stuff?
I like that. That was basically the same reason way before I was even published. Like 5 years before I was published, I went to I just asked, literally at 1 a.m. the bars are open still in Germany. So, and then the last 10 bar flies, and I got up and said, hey, you guys want to hear a couple of poems, right? So that was pretty much the same reaction. So, and so in the same way, I embrace the social media or the modern times, where this is more or less easier if you want so. You have a buffer in between. So under my name, like written in one word, Thorsten Nesch, I have the homepage, and you find me on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and sometimes on TikTok.
Oh, wow. So you're on TikTok. Do you have a growler with you, and you do like a dance?
Yeah, TikTok is funny. I kind of now... try to figure out where that fits the best. I get some of my best reactions there for some reason. Maybe because of the short video format that they have. But I like to do video and filmmaking and photography as well. So at the moment, I kind of experiment around, but I'll check in there.
Right. Of course, we'll have everything up on the website so people can find you with one click and they can, you know, go watch you on TikTok and stuff, you know. do the reactions matter in the sense of, or, you know, because this is a pretty modern world now, so people can find you pretty easily and they can say things about you and about your writing or about things. Do you like having that interaction, or is it kind of weird for you, or how do you react?
If it's genuine, I had a close science fiction novel published in Germany, and there were things in there where I did research into drones. It's called The Drone Pilot, and it's currently now, it's a mandatory read if you in language arts in Germany, if you want to finish high school in German, and in English it's 1984. So the first review was like, oh, wait, this is pretty nonsense here with that, what he calls, I called it a buffalo, like a steer or something in my novel.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, it's like, thanks for mentioning that. And then I send and say that if in case you don't find that like believable, here's a link to Lockheed, because they have that developed already. Yeah. And then he said, I'm so sorry, I really didn't know, I should do my homework better, thank you so much, you know. And that is a genuine, I wasn't upset that he didn't do the research. I mean, he reviews books like by tons, right? So, and he took it the right way, and then that is okay. I mean, insults never happened so far, at least not about my my books.
Well, let's get that happening, listeners.
Do I hear typing right now?
Yeah.
Is that your keyboard?
Yeah. He's looking for a little bit of criticism here, a little bit of nasty insults here. No. You were nominated up there, right? One of your first books, right? Does that put pressure on you to have to perform a certain level then? Do you think about it?
It is really about writing is so personal for me that it relates back to this, like, this is a different entity. I also don't think about who will read my book. And by not doing so, I'm surprised every time that my books are read from young to old and from different backgrounds and jobs and financial status or whatever. And the most I'm surprised when people then say, yeah, I read 5 of your books or 8 or all of them. And I'm like, wow, you know, I can't even imagine. And, but, you know, because, yeah, and because they're so different. So there's not the Thorsten tone, right? Like Stephen King has a certain tone when he has a novel. And for me, it's very, very personal to the protagonist. You know, if I have a 15-year-old, you know, that comes from a blue-collar background, he talks different already than a 17-year-old, where the older brother listens to political comedy 10 hours a day. He gets a different vocabulary right away. And if, you know, just to make an example. And so if somebody says, I read all your novels, I enjoyed them, I literally ask, how, why, how does this happen? And yeah. And the commonality is like, what they then say, it's like, yeah, you don't write too much. You just write what has to be written. I'm not bored, you know? And that is like, yeah, then I did my job, you know, as I like to write, I like to read, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I get the same kind of response on my writing, but that's because my books are usually left in the bathrooms.
The best place to read.
All sorts of people, all sorts of walks of life know what I've written. Well, it's a really interesting story and idea and everything. I just Brawler should be a series. That's my
thing. Who knows? I mean, that's the thing that publishing houses always like. They were like, "Oh, Thorsten, write a second part to this or to that," and I'm like, well, I'm not saying no, but I need that best idea. The idea has to be better than all the others I have, right?
Yeah. Well, and it's got to be hard to write sequels, in a sense, like even book 2, book 3, and start doing a series on something like that, because, you know, especially if you have a great idea on the first one and it goes really well, to try and...
Yeah.
Because people compare that, right?
Yeah.
So...
Now, where I can see it, it's like, I mean, this, the Growler is is available as audiobook as well over Audible, and wonderful, really narrated by Chuck Bell, the former Chicago radio host. And that was way more interesting for me to see that happening and to work with Chuck and then trying to come up with a second idea, right? And for me, it would be, again, not because it's film, but I see this also as a feature film. Is absolute doable, and I think would be a great addition to the horror genre.
Yeah. Who's going to play Roller?
you and Dave.
No. The costume. Dave's got his little karate moves. He can be Roller. Kung Groller. He can be like the guy running around with a little headband on and chopping down things, you know. Well, this has been really interesting, and we're really glad you took the time to come on the show. Our guest today has been the author of Growler, and that's Thorsten Nesch. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thanks.
Thanks, Thorsten.
Tired of wasting time trying to decide what to watch on your streaming service? Go to our website and look for the Martino Movie Reviews.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com. houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show is over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Yeah. Good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.